Good Wednesday morning, everyone. It is October 21st. I'm Clayton Morris. Welcome to Morning Invest, the only morning business show for real people, not the Wall Street types. We've got some big news on the stimulus front, which we're going to get to in a moment. Yes, actual news, big movement, and positive news that we could see a stimulus by the end of the week. So that's all great news. How much house should you buy? We got some viewer questions this morning on refinancing and buying a and getting a house right now because mortgage rates, interest rates are so stinking low, at record low. We'll answer your questions on that. Plus, will President Trump, if President Trump loses this election, will the market collapse? The president is saying that that's what's going to happen. President Trump has said that repeatedly. He's been saying it again while he's been campaigning. So should you be concerned about a market collapse? President Trump loses, we will separate fact from fiction and show you the data points that I think we need to most be concerned with. If you're new to the show, welcome. Please subscribe. You know, YouTube shows me that 70% of you watch the show aren't subscribed to the channel. So please just subscribe to the channel and then turn on that little bell notification down there. And what that does is it allows you to know as soon as we go live, which we do this show every day, 9 a.m. Eastern time, or when we publish a video, you'll get a notification in that regard. So please subscribe. I think you'll find it very, very helpful. So we're going to deep dive some of these big stories this morning. Grover is usually here, but it's running around now. My son took him out for a walk because it's one of those in-service days for the kids. So the kids are home. I've got to put them to work, get them out of the house. I was telling earlier in the chat, I don't even know what an in-service day is. All I know is as a kid, I loved it. As a parent, I dislike it because now it means the kids are home. So if anyone knows what an in-service day is, let me know. All right, we've got some stimulus news to get to. Now, I know it sounds like a broken record. You're probably sick and tired of hearing of it. I'm frankly sick and tired of reporting it. But we actually have some positive news. And this is the first time in a while that I could really say that because a bill is being drafted as we speak. It's being called the HEROES 2 Act. Nancy Pelosi, optimistic, all smiles yesterday, because it appears that the White House and House Democrats have come to a basic, almost complete agreement on what the HEROES Act 2 will look like. A bipartisan bill developed by Steven Mnuchin, President Trump, Mark Meadows, and House Democrats. So here is Speaker Pelosi yesterday. You can hear, just pay attention to some of the little tiny sticking points that remain, but the bill is being drafted, it's being written up, and some of the little sticking points can be ironed out in committee. Very exciting stuff. And we could actually see this before Election Day. So here is Speaker Pelosi on Bloomberg answering these questions.
They've come a long way on that, I have to admit. So this morning, today, let me just say what the Tuesday, the 48 hours was designed to do, for us to exchange all the unresolved issues. What is your best language? What is our best language? And let's see where we are. Now let's weigh the equities. We all want to get an agreement because people need it and it's urgent and our economy needs it. And so that's what, hopefully by the end of the day today, we'll know where we all are. We have one little bump in the road with the Appropriations Committee that is not sure they're going to be ready, but let's hope they are. We're starting to write the bill and then we can have the negotiation. But I'm optimistic.
Optimistic. Do you feel the optimism? Obviously, the devil's in the details. We don't know what's in the bill yet. That'll be the next round of reporting. Jeff Stein and others who are going to get access to some of this early on. We'll see if we can get some of this framework ahead of time. But as it's being written, there won't have to be a lot of new changes because the HEROES Act 1 was already written. So a lot of that will get scrapped. They'll be able to use a lot of the same language. And we should have a framework, an actual bill, by the end of the week, according to Nancy Pelosi. Now, that's exciting. Now, what about over in the Senate? Of course, that's the big question I'm sure you're all wondering, is whether or not Mitch McConnell will actually bring it to the floor for a vote. Now, according to the Senate Majority Leader's office, Mitch McConnell says that if the House passes an agreement, so it's not just having the bill, they have to pass an agreement. Remember, there are Republicans in the House. And if they're able to compromise and get a bill out of the House, Mitch McConnell says that he will put it to a vote at some point. Okay, that's a direct quote from Mitch McConnell. He will put it to a vote at some point. Now, that's where it's going to come down to President Trump. Get this thing passed. First of all, the Trump campaign needs this desperately. They are in deep trouble. We have close to 40 million Americans that have now early voted. Incredibly troubling signs for President Trump in a number of battleground states. They're running out of money very quickly. There's a lot of questions as to how in the world did they waste so much money. Brad Parscale, their former campaign manager, who was basically enriching his own lifestyle. They had $1 billion and they blew through it. I mean, it really is political malpractice that in October, you have to make the president of the United States, who's running for re-election, you had $1 billion, you have to fly to California to do a fundraiser in a state that you don't stand any chance of winning. So you had to go to California, which is a total waste of time, and do a fundraiser. So the Trump campaign is in a lot of trouble and they need this victory. Now, a lot of people have early voted. It's not clear that this would really move the needle one way or the other for the Trump campaign, but they need a Hail Mary pass. They're going to use anything they can at this point to be out there at the podium to try to bring some positive news to the American people a few days before the election to say, look, we got a stimulus pass. I'm telling Mitch McConnell, bring it to the floor for a vote. We need this. The American people need it. That's where it would require presidential leadership. He hasn't shown it yet on this issue. He had all summer to show this issue, or this leadership, and he totally squandered it. Again, if I were the president and I was behind in these polls and I knew that I had a Hail Mary in my back pocket, which is stimulus, I'd be out at the podium every day reiterating how important it is for the American people. And Senate Republicans, you should be paying attention. Most Americans can't stand these entrenched Washington swamp creatures. That's what got Trump elected in the first place, and he's abandoned that position in many ways. He attacked Ted Cruz. He went after Marco Rubio. He went after these guys. If he went after them again and called them swamp creatures, it might move the needle for him. But hey, we have 13 days left. Not a lot can happen in this amount of time. But we could see a stimulus if Mitch McConnell actually brings this to a vote before Election Day. Either way, it's going to happen right around Election Day, before, a little bit after. It's coming. Now, not to be undone is Mitch McConnell and his wily band of Senate Republicans who never disappoint at being absolute failures, and we should absolutely vote these losers out. They're just awful. Awful, awful, awful. The worst of the worst, quite honestly. Heck, even Tucker Carlson wrote a book about how awful Mitch McConnell is. He's on the front cover of Tucker Carlson's book as a swamp creature. Nevertheless, so Mitch McConnell yesterday rolls out a new skinny bill over the past 24 hours, which is a little over $600 billion. Democrats in the Senate were floored by this. And right now, what you have happening is good cop, bad cop. So you see how happy Nancy Pelosi is. Just like, listen how happy and positive. She's negotiating with the White House. She's trying to get something done here. Treasury Secretary Mnuchin is also playing good cop. He's been a great negotiator through this. So I like what he's actually been doing here. She's playing the positive role. Listen.
They've come a long way on that, I have to admit. So they've come
a long way on that, I have to admit. I'm optimistic. Good job. We're working with them. She's calling Treasury Secretary Mnuchin every day. They're talking for hours a day. There's camaraderie there. They're working together. And then over in the Senate, Mitch McConnell rolls out this ridiculous $600 billion bill that's just a joke. It's just one joke after another from that Senate Republican caucus. And Senate Democrats, Chuck Schumer, get to play bad cop and just attack the Senate leadership. Listen.
We have so many different problems. And what do the Republicans do, Leader McConnell? A stunt. They can't get anything done. Their caucus is divided. Leader McConnell and Senate Republicans are the major barrier to preventing us from getting a bill. Because even when Mnuchin calls them up, they say no, they're not going to do anything. When the American people are suffering, to put this political stunt on the floor a second time is cruel.
It actually is cruel. I mean, that's a good way to describe it. Because if you read between the lines, you know that Republicans, they got their big bailout for businesses. Mitch McConnell gets most of his money from oil and energy companies, millions of dollars donated to his campaign over the years. He's bought and sold by big business. Ted Cruz as well, Rand Paul, all of these guys that said they're not going to vote for a stimulus because their big money donors got money. It is a stunt. It's disgusting. When you have the Federal Reserve Chief, Jerome Powell, saying we need large stimulus for the consumer. And you basically ignore the consumer and focus exclusively on businesses again. I mean, it's like you couldn't even write this script. Someone says, hey, we're going to write a script, a Hollywood script. We're going to have this evil Republican. It's going to be the evil Republican, and he's going to just be in the bag for big businesses. People around the script writing table will be like, no, that's too obvious. That's just too obvious of a script. Sad thing is, it's so true. So, you know, truth is stranger than fiction, right? But that's exactly what's going on here. So positive news that at least we will see a stimulus bill written by the end of the week through committee in the House, could come out of there and over to the Senate by as early as this weekend or early next week. Then it's up to Mitch McConnell, with about 7 to 9 days left before the election, to bring it to the Senate floor for a vote. Then to get it to the president's desk. We will be watching. Let's watch over the next few days to see if we see any kind of presidential leadership on this issue. Instead of just tweeting about stimulus, go big or go home. The president keeps saying that he wants his policy, his proposal to be bigger than what the Democrats want. He keeps tweeting that he wants it to be larger than the $2.2 trillion that Democrats want. Well, let's see. Let's see in the next 48 hours what if he put up or shut up. Let's see. And let's see if he can strong arm Mitch McConnell to get this actually through. So if you are new here, please subscribe to the channel. And do me a favor, smash that like button, because what happens is when you smash that like button, it pushes us out to more people so they can learn about what's going on in their financial future, understand this corrupt government, how all of this works. So please smash that like button and subscribe to our channel. Really, really appreciate it. We have some viewer questions this morning that I want to get to. And we've got more to get to here on the show. We're going to look at the market today and whether or not the market collapses if President Trump is not reelected. John Cornicello, thank you for your question. I hope they push this through, Clayton. New Jersey is screwing us with that $300 they said we would get this week. I hope so too, John. New Jersey just voted most hated state in the country for obvious reasons. Tip July says, the market always falls during a presidential election, nothing new. Right. We go through these swings all the time. I mean, I've covered politics for 20 years. So we're going to go into the market in just a minute and what happens if that actually collapses. Perilous Temple says, good morning, Clayton. Do you play the guitar? It seems like a cool Strat was in the background during your old UFO show. Yes, I do play the guitar. Yes, I have a Stratocaster and my acoustic guitar. You know what I was looking at is one of those carbon fiber guitars. Really looking at that as a possibility. My son wants to learn how to start playing guitar. He plays piano really well. So could do that. Larry Brown says in-service days are where teachers are in school working on plans without children. That it's a planning day. Got it. Okay. Thank you. So they're there working. I know, because we have parent student teacher conferences later, just after the show. I've got to jump on Zoom and do a bunch of these. Chris Daly. See, Chris Daly, a perfect example of why you should put an avatar up of your picture. Thank you so much. Instead of just to like the generic thumb. Chris Daly says, Mitch is going to laugh maniacally. Such a horrific thing to have witnessed. So creepy. Yeah. Mitch McConnell. I hope you hear what Chris is saying. He's just going to sit there because he's totally fine making money off of these big donors, and he doesn't care. He's the one of the least liked senators in the country. Mr. Wisdom Seeker says, "We'll get the stimulus by morning, Sunday morning." That's right.
Your quiver, you're not ruling anything out.
Good morning, Sunday morning.
All right, we've got more to get to here on the show. Let's talk about the market. I saw this question from a viewer last night that said, I'm nervous about the market. If President Trump loses this election, will the market collapse if President Trump loses? Well, the reason you think that is because the president keeps telling you that. Don't believe the hype. But here's the president. He's been tweeting about it all summer. He's been out at the podium during his campaign rallies saying it. Here he was with a tweet.
All right, this is pretty blunt. The president warning, you don't elect me, it's going to be a market crash. That's simple. Kadena.
The Trump economy is setting records and has a long way to go. However, if anyone but me takes over in 2020, I know the competition very well. There will be a market crash, the likes of which has not been seen before. Keep America great. Come on, man. Come on, man. Really?
Come on, man.
Give me a break. So, you know, I was a presidential history major, and one of my best college professors was an excellent professor around American history, around United States presidential history. And one of the things that I learned and has always stuck with me is that the office of the presidency is very limited constitutionally. The presidency is really limited in its ability to do much. And we only really expected our presidents to come with a platform after FDR. Most presidents at the time, when they would run for office, would do like whistle stop tours, and they'd wave and they'd say hello. They didn't come with any kind of a platform. The American people didn't expect the president of the United States, the executor, to have any kind of a platform. That was Congress's job. After all, they're the legislative branch. So what are your plans for us? Are you going to build a railroad? Are you going to cut taxes? That's Congress. Now we expect our presidents to run. What are you going to do about immigration? What are you going to do about healthcare? Presidents are very weak. They can't do almost anything unless the houses of Congress are in their favor. So presidential leadership is trade, some executive action, and in the case of President Trump, being able to move markets with a few tweets here and there. But in large part, as Governor Huckabee once said to me, very little to do, if anything, with the economy. It's just the truth. Now, presidents will be blamed for a sagging economy if it's on their watch, and they'll be praised when it's booming if it's on their watch, as in the case of Bill Clinton. Right? It was booming under Bill Clinton. Then it was sagging under, now it's sagging under President Trump, and he's being blamed for it. The truth is that there's very little the president can do to move the needle on this. But the market, let's talk specifically about the market. Because as he's been talking about the stock market booming under him, and you know, the stock market's going to collapse if you don't elect me again. It's total garbage because look, we even just 2 days ago had a 400 point decline in the market. And I've covered politics for 20 years. And I've seen presidents who during boom times are praised, Democrats, Republicans. It doesn't matter what party. The market is party agnostic. The market does not follow the party. So if Joe Biden gets elected, this idea that the market is going to collapse because Joe Biden's elected is ridiculous. And if President Trump wins, that it's going to be fine is ridiculous. Or if Trump loses, all of that is garbage. Wall Street is already secure in the fact that Biden is not going to change anything. Biden is paid for just like Trump is, corporate donors, Republican Party, just like the Democratic Party, increasing defense budget by 20%. They're all part of one big corporate ball of wax. So Wall Street is already fine. They've already moved on and believe that Biden's going to win. What they care about is uncertainty. So the market is not going to collapse because Biden wins. But I will say the market is going to collapse regardless of who wins. That's an important point. And you can look at four different key data points. I've showed you these charts a little bit earlier this week, but in the context of what's going to unfold with the presidency, it's important to recall these data points. Over the next few months, we are going to hit a wall. Corporate debt is exploding. Businesses are taking on so much debt that they're not able to pay back and not paying it back, that they're hoping that the federal government will swoop in and bail them out. But the problem is that there's only so much money the federal government can print. There's only so much bailing out that they can do. And the Federal Reserve never got rid of their balance sheets from a few years ago in 2009. They kept all of that corporate debt. They didn't pay it back. They didn't eliminate it. They've just been adding to it. So there are a couple of key data points that I want to show you here. So if you're worried about Biden or Trump winning, there is a market collapse coming regardless. Now, I don't have a crystal ball to say that it's going to happen in 3 months or 5 months, but it is inevitable. It's inevitable. A couple of key data points. Right now, just look at the Buffett indicator, where the stock market is significantly overvalued according to the Buffett indicator, meaning currently at 184.2% on its valuation. Okay? That's why Warren Buffett has sold stocks like crazy and bought gold. That's why smart investors are getting out of the stock market. Here's the other key data point you should be looking at is this, the Shiller price to earnings ratio index. Remember what I said the other day, a healthy stock market for buying stocks is about 15 to 16. Right now, it's at 31.86 is the price to earnings ratio. See Black Tuesday, what happened during the Depression, Black Monday, and then the collapse that follows. Thank you, Junior Torres, for your super chat. Then look at 2000.com bubble, burst in 2009. Now we are here at 31.86%. Again, if you get in the 20s, you should be selling stocks. Now that we're in the 30s, holy smokes. Now let's look at the public debt. How much debt do we have in this country? This is the federal debt as a percentage of GDP. Again, kind of chugging along here. Then 2008 hits. They add all that debt to their balance books, but never get rid of it. Now, peaks again, and they just keep adding to the Federal Reserve debt amount. It's our public debt right there. How is that sustainable, folks? It's not. And then here's that corporate debt I was talking about. Look at that. See, just in the past few months, these corporations are not investing this into research and development and hiring people. No, they're buying their own shares back and artificially inflating the value of the stock and the stock market and enriching these executives. This is a travesty, folks. I mean, you just look at the Dow Jones. Where we've had these peaks, it's bounced back. I mean, look as we get, you know, here's the dot-com bubble goes down, boom, down, then bounces back, right? But you always have this enormous growth before you have a collapse. And that's what we're seeing right now. The pandemic is, I really don't even think we should be looking at the pandemic as an issue in this. Because the pandemic hit in March, boom, and that bounced back right to where it was. Massive growth before a collapse. It always happens. So if we go back to President Trump saying that this is going to happen.
All right, this is pretty blunt. The president warning, you don't elect me, it's going to be a market crash. That's simple. Kadena.
It's going to happen either way. The Trump economy. There is no such thing as a Trump economy. It's just how it is. This debt is unsustainable. So stop worrying about whether or not President Trump's going to be reelected could cause a market collapse. Wall Street is doing just fine at the moment. They're happier than a pig in you know what with this overinflated, artificially inflated stock market that's going to collapse regardless of who wins. Regardless. It's on the horizon. And, you know, you might say, I saw someone comment the other day that, you know, well, the Fed will just bail them out. They might, in part. But the problem is, again, when they bailed them out back here, they never got rid of the balance. See this here in 2009, the bailouts and the federal debt? The Federal Reserve doesn't have a lot of runway left to assume more debt. they only have a limited supply. They can only print so much money before we see massive inflation and corporate collapse. So, you know, there's not a lot of room for this. So this idea that we can keep kicking the can down the street, it's inevitable. I mean, it's like climate change, right? You can only ignore it for so long before water levels start to rise and cities start to go underwater and hurricanes start to hit towns repeatedly in ways that they hadn't for 100 years. Wildfires keep coming. You can only ignore it for so long. And that's how I feel about the public debt. You don't have to take my word for it. Just look at all of the intelligent economists right now that are saying the same thing. And again, don't listen to what they say. Watch what they do. Warren Buffett encouraging you to stay in the stock market. What is he doing? He's getting out of the stock market and he's buying gold and real estate. And he's, you know, dumping on airline stocks and cutting off huge amounts of stocks that are on the cusp right now, repositioning into businesses that can survive this. Pay attention to what they do, not what they say. Smash that like button, folks. That's one thing you can pay attention to. When you smash that like button, it pushes us out into the YouTube algorithm, lets more people discover and build financial intelligence. And don't forget to subscribe to the channel. I should also mention, by the way, we have our daily Morning Invest newsletter. So every morning, it's delivered right to your inbox. It's totally free for you to subscribe. You can read it in about 5 minutes. Just go to morninginvest.com. That's how you can subscribe. Add some humor to it. We cover the big business stories that I think are important to you that you're not going to see covered necessarily on CNBC and these other corporate news channels. They just care about the stock market. They care about their Wall Street friends. I care about the food on your table, stimulus, and the things that affect you and your family, which is what this show is all about. So thank you so much. Oh, a new feature I just want to tell you about. We just rolled out a new feature. So you can ask any kind of financial related questions you like. You know, should I refinance my house? I've got this debt. What should I do? I'd like to invest in real estate. How do I do it? Anything like that. Got a new feature we just started. Go to morninginvest.com/Clayton, and that's how you can leave me a voicemail. So try to keep your voicemails to about 30 seconds, and then we'll play your voicemail here on the show. So here's how you can leave a voicemail. Say, hey, Clayton, this is Paula from Pennsylvania. I'm thinking about refinancing my house. I have this amount of money in the bank, et cetera. And try to keep your question to about 30 seconds. And then I will try to tackle those questions right here on the show. Again, morninginvest.com/Clayton is how you can leave us a 30-second voicemail message. Okay, I've got my whiteboard out because we're going to talk about how much house is too much house to buy in a minute. And we're also going to talk about 5 ways for you to get out of debt. Jenny Kuba, you look okay. Thank you, Lisa. Josh Ware wants to know about Outlet, if they go out of business. Good question. I mean, your money's insured with them. Go to their website, morninginvest.com/outlet, to read about how your money's insured by a third party. It's not even insured by them. They have a separate insurance with your money. You said we have some questions? Oh, there we go. Nate G says, the market doesn't care who's president, just wants certainty about if there is a president. That's right. Right. Again, the only thing the market doesn't like is like when we were going through the impeachment process. They don't like to know, like, oh my God, is what's going to happen here? Is our government going to collapse because there's going to be a revolt, a coup, who knows what? That's the only time the market cares about the presidency. That's it. ER is a new member. Thank you so much for joining and becoming a channel member. If you'd like to become a channel member, remember on Fridays we do our members only chat. So you can just go to morninginvest.com/join. Daniel O'Connell says, there are plenty of stocks that won't be impacted one way or another, whether the stimulus passed or not. Some stocks will be in serious trouble if there's no stimulus. Yeah, I mean, airline stocks is a good example. There's a lot of examples of different stocks that are going to be hurting if there's no stimulus. I mean, restaurant sector, I mean, if restaurants end up going under, if some of the, like, the larger restaurant chains that have actually weathered the storm pretty well, Darden Restaurants example, owners of Red Lobster and Olive Garden, Chipotle, McDonald's, Wendy's, a lot of these larger chains had the cash reserves to get through it and they've been doing fine. Just a lot of the small restaurants have gotten crushed. Take one more question here if we can. If we have it. Diane Bonneau says, Biden is a corporatist whose docile presidency will be great for the elites and corporation establishment. Within the fireworks, nothing will fundamentally change for you, as Biden told donors. Exactly. That's exactly right, Diane. He's a corporatist. They're all corporatists. I mean, the fact that right now you have this BS story floating around there from Politico over the past 24 hours, basically saying that Biden is interested in having Republicans in his cabinet, John Kasich being vetted and others, like, come on. It's all part of this one world. Until we can get some real third-party candidates in there who are not bought and sold by these corporations, it's all going to continue. So the market shouldn't care. They don't care because nothing's going to change. Ashley Morris, where can I hear the podcast of the cryptocurrency person you spoke to? Well, we haven't released it. I have a real estate investing podcast called the Investing in Real Estate Podcast with Clayton Morris. You can subscribe to that if you like. We're going to release it there. And we may also release it on our new podcast, our new Morning Invest podcast right here. We may release it as a bonus episode on the weekend. So yeah, both of those places. But the Investing in Real Estate podcast is where it will be. It was released just to our Financial Freedom Academy members first. I'd love to see Andrew Yang on your show. Me too. So right now you might be really enticed by all of these mortgage interest rates, which are incredibly low. You know, every day we follow the mortgage interest rates in our daily newsletter at morninginvest.com. And the rates are always like right around 3%, or even the 15-year note, the 15-year mortgage is like, you know, under 2% or around 2% right now. It's crazy. So a lot of you are going out trying to find a home right now, sell a home, upgrade your home, refinance your home. And I got this question yesterday from John in Texas. Great question. We want to buy a house because of the low interest rates, and we found a house that is larger than we need. We really like it. Our mortgage payment would only go up by about $50 a month for the larger house. Should we buy it? Okay. So it's a great question because you could be allured to this idea of getting a larger property. You're seeing this lower mortgage rate and you're thinking, oh, the payment won't really go up that much. So you're going to get more bang for your buck, right? Larger house, more land, more bedrooms, and my mortgage payment is not going to go up that much. So great. That's a positive, right? That your mortgage payment won't move that much and these interest rates are so low. But my question to you is, why would you want a larger house if you don't need it? People are buying too much house. And the problem, I think, in America right now, people are becoming house poor and people are buying too much of a house to live in. You know, it's an interesting take right now where you have like millennials who are going the opposite direction, looking sort of a more of a minimalist approach to house buying. And 40 and 50 year olds who maybe couldn't get the larger house that they wanted a number of years ago, even though they don't need it, are now trying to upgrade to this larger property for no reason. So that $50, John, is a total lie. That $50 is not really $50. Yes, you're going to pay $50 more in your mortgage payment. For now, you're going to get this 5,000 square foot home instead of the 3,800 square foot home that you were going to get. Now you can get so much more. Right? More bedrooms. I can get a finished basement. All of this additional space. The thing that people don't remember, or the people that they forget about this, is that now all of that additional space is going to require upkeep. All of that additional space is going to require utility bills to heat. So that $50 extra per month is one thing, but now your insurance goes up. How much more will you now pay for a much larger property? How much more will you pay because you're having to heat that finished basement that you're never going to use? Or those additional rooms that you think you will use, but you won't. A lot of people forget that you really only have a certain amount of time for your kids to be home. You know, I heard it once said to me, and it was really fascinating. This has always stuck with me. For people that are like, well, we're not going to go on spring break with the kids this year. We're going to skip it this year. We all couldn't get our schedules together. We couldn't figure it out. And if you think about it, How much time do you really have left with your kids that are when they're home? If you really put it down on paper, you're like, oh, well, they're 13 right now. You really only have like 5 spring break trips left till they're off on their own at 18 and they're not going to want to go on spring break with you. So do it. Do what you can, right? And a lot of people forget that those kids are going to be gone soon, off in college, or you know, they're going to be moving in out on their own and doing their own thing. So for you to be upgrading to a larger house when your kids are like in high school or junior high school, and then what? And then they leave, and now you're left with this large house that you're never going to use those rooms, or you're going to convert them into. It's one woman I knew, she converted one room into like a present room where like that was the present wrapping room. Isn't that the most American thing you've ever heard? A present wrapping room? She had a whole room devoted to wrapping presents. Really? You're going to pay extra for that in your property taxes and to heat that room and to cool that room? By the way, that house was in Florida. So she was paying, you know, air conditioning just for that room, for a present wrapping room. So you really need to get serious about the space that you actually need. You know, we had a larger house a number of years ago, and we realized that it was worthless, that we were not spending time in a lot of these different rooms, and it was a waste. Most of the time, our kids wanted to be near us, so we were all in one room together. So we rent where we live, and we have a much smaller footprint, a much smaller space, because what we all love to just be near each other, you know? Now, if you're like me and you need like a separate space for a studio or something like that, or an office, you work from home and you know you need a dedicated office space, think about those things. But people are spending and, you know, buying too much house. The other thing you should remember is what happens if salaries change? You only should be spending about 25% of your take-home pay on a mortgage. 25% of your take-home pay should be spent on a mortgage. That's it. Adding that additional $50 a year is not just $50. It's adding the utility bills, the property taxes, the insurance, all of those additional costs. And for what? You admitted to me in this message, John, that you don't need it. We want to buy a house because of low interest rates, and we found a house that is larger than we need. This is a problem in America. Buy that larger truck even though you don't need it. Buy that larger house even though you don't need it. Become house poor because you didn't need to. Then what happens when you buy this larger house? I had a friend up in Connecticut who bought this huge house, and he said, you know, we bought the house and now we have no money left now to buy the furniture for it. So that's great that you got this larger house. You have all these additional rooms. What are they just going to be, empty rooms? You're going to do like a yoga studio in there because there's no furniture. Now you have to go out and start buying furniture for all these rooms. Now you have to clean these rooms. You got that nice big finished basement. What are you going to do? Turn it into a home theater? Going to buy a big screen TV? Going to buy big couches? Going to buy, you know, build a bar? All of those things that you never end up using? Speaking from experience, it's a waste. So don't become house poor. Just because these interest rates are attractive, go the opposite direction. Go the opposite direction. Utilize these interest rates to invest in real estate, something that's going to produce cash flow for you every month. You know, use right now, go out and find an investment property. Maybe set aside some of that extra money you'd spend on buying that larger house. Use that as a down payment to buy an investment property. Or are you out of debt totally? You know, pay off some debt, which we'll get to in our next segment. But you do not need a bigger house for no reason. And just think about how your family will change when those kids go off to college. And all of those additional rooms are going to become available, and you're going to wonder what the heck to do with them. Now, will you sell the house? So I'd love to hear your questions and feedback. You can leave me a voicemail message if you'd like, or drop a message right here in the comments below. You can go to morninginvest.com/Clayton. Leave me a voicemail. Ask me a 30-second question about your personal finances, etc. And I will discuss them here on the show. And please don't forget to smash that like button and subscribe to the channel if you are new here. It really helps us. It helps get the message out to more and more people as we try to help you build financial freedom and navigate this crazy, corrupt banking system that so many people are victims of. in this country. So thank you so much for that question, John. We're going to talk about getting out of debt next. How many of you right now, where is Grover? People are like, where should be Grover? He's running around today. He's not, he's being a little frolicky because my kids are home today for in-service day. The join button is not working. What? We have some questions there, Philip. You want to throw up? Okay. Cool. Jacqueline Juno says, higher light bills, higher water bills, more maintenance, yuck. Exactly. So when you start doing that, you have to remember all of those things. Kristen Swenson says, yes, I want a mini home around 1,000 square feet. Yeah, you know, the mini house movement has taken over. And that's because people realize, how much space do you actually need? I think people, certainly in the United States, we think that we need all of this additional space. We don't end up using it. You end up spending the most time in just a few rooms, right? Or the main room in your house. Do you need all this space? That's why the mini movement is moving so big right now. Brides Biscuit says, it's sad in today's age that the house that we could enjoy is beyond the means of a second income household. Yeah, well, that's why we have an affordable housing crisis in this country. Katie Biodrosky, light bills go up, more maintenance. Yeah, you know, people forget, oh, now I need to get another garage door opener. Who's going to mow the grass around here? We have such a large yard, I can't do it. You're going to hire someone for that now? Surfy Fishy 888. Unless you need more room for extra family members to share expenses, people should be downsizing, not upsizing. Consolidate, share expenses, or downsize. Yeah. Unless you can like rent out a room, you know, Airbnb one of your rooms and actually defer some of your overall mortgage payment. That's a smart move. You know, convert your house into an LLC and turn it into a rental property if you have that extra space. Or convert your downstairs where you have a separate entrance or something. That's something where you can actually turn it into a performing asset. Maria Davis, I agree with you, Clayton. I had a 3-level, 4-bedroom lake house when my daughter went off to college. It was too big for me alone. Yeah, because you're not going to use all those rooms. I mean, it just gets quiet. And then you're like, this is kind of spooky. What do I need? You know, rent maybe. Turn it in, go to become a renter and then travel the world. You know, use some of that extra money to go see the world. We only have one life. Darren Watson says, planning on downsizing from a 2-bedroom, 50 single wide to a 30 masthead sloop, a sailboat. There you go. That's downsizing. You know, and then you call any harbor your home port, right? I'd love to do that. George Carl, Project Circa 04 says, George Carlin said it best. Why are we always buying things we don't need? Yeah, and the problem is you become a slave to all this crap. You become a slave to it. The things start to own you. I remember hearing a story, Pico Iyer, who spiritual teacher and really interesting guy in sort of a spiritual space. I remember hearing an interview with him where he talked about his house burning down. He had a big house in Malibu, and he and his wife were watching it burn down in a wildfire, and they came upon it as it was burning. And he remembers just standing there being so relieved that his house was burning down. And I thought, I understand that. Because what he was saying is, you know, he had, like, there was a few possessions that he missed. There were a few things that he cared about in that house, like a few photos that he was actually able to get out. But the rest of it, he didn't care at all. And he said it was so freeing. And now he lives in a small apartment in Japan, in Tokyo, with his wife, in a small little apartment, and they love it. Live right in the city center, and he's able to go get the food he wants, go down to the grocery when he needs it, and he doesn't need this huge space anymore, and it's liberating. We should all think in those terms. I think that would be transformative. But we continue to keep buying bigger and bigger things and keep getting further and further into debt, which we're going to talk about now. And our final segment of the day. Let me get a little water here. I've got my whiteboard ready to go. How many of you have smashed that like button today? You did? Thank you, Grover. Oh, he's over there. I'm going to take a little shot of him here because he's in a different bed. That's why I didn't see him. Stand by. We had so much rain, I brought in some outside cushions and I laid it on the floor. So instead of him sitting in his normal bed, he's sitting on one of the random cushions like a cat. That's how he does it. And he's chewing on my daughter's slipper. That's what that little fluffy thing is in front of him. This is why we can't have nice things around here. Because Grover will destroy it. Chewing on it. Metal Fender guy, thank you for your super chat. We pay $700 for four-bedroom rent. We need bad credit help. I don't quite understand that. Now you move beds? Ugh. Now he moves over to his actual bed as soon as I get up and put a camera on him. That's how it rolls around here. Let's talk about debt. You know, one of the biggest things holding Americans back from building wealth in this country is the amount of debt that they're sitting in. And, you know, look, I think you learn from your leaders. And the leaders in the United States love debt. I mean, just look at the Federal Reserve. You know, they just keep piling on more and more debt. I mean, look at the amount of public debt that the Federal Reserve takes on and doesn't care. Look at that. In the past few months alone, in 2020, public debt has skyrocketed. Federal Reserve of the United States is in massive debt. So we learn from our leaders. They tell us debt is fine. Isn't that amazing? And yet other countries don't suffer this problem. Other countries don't have this problem at all. Did you know that? I don't know how many of you actually knew this about Europe and other countries. For instance, the Bank Santander, you know, in Spain. If you want to get a business account in Spain, a business account, not even a personal credit card, I think the limit is about $7,000 that you're allowed to get as a business on a credit card. And even then, you have to have enough of that money in the bank as a proportionality of that amount of credit, meaning you basically have to have $7,000 in the bank to get $7,000 in credit. Now, there are different banks and different things around the world, but my point is that in Europe and other places, they don't even allow you to have credit cards. The most you'll get in a credit card is like a $500 credit limit for a personal card. And even then, you have to have about $500 in your account to even get the card and to basically there at all times in order to cover it. And on top of that, they don't have huge student loan debt that we have in the United States. They have free public college. When I went to the University of Pittsburgh, I remember I got a Bank of America credit card because they had a table set up at the student union. The university allowed the bank to come there and set up a table so they could get students in debt. Bank of America is paying the University of Pittsburgh, right? Of course, that's how it works. Let's get them young. Let's get them in debt young. By the way, I was paying off student loan debt at the same time. Student loan debt, and now I got a credit card. And they don't care. Huge corporate write-offs for them. They know that only a percentage of people are going to pay this debt back, but that's good enough for them. Americans are saddled with debt. And until we get our debt under control, we're never going to really be able to build wealth. So more than 40% right now of Americans have this amount of debt. I mean, I even think that's small. Of you watching right now, let me know in the comments below, how much debt do you have? Is it more than $9,000 in credit card debt? I mean, that's the average according to valuepenguin.com. I think it's higher than that. It sounds low to me, but I think it's higher, especially with student loan debt thrown in there. Credit card debt's one thing. With student loan debt on all of that too, I'd be curious your thoughts. But here's the tricky thing about credit cards. You know, it's so sexy to get one of these credit cards because you think, oh, I'm going to get airline points. I'm going to get cash back rewards and all of that. Great. I use credit cards all the time for my business, but I pay them off every month. So if I'm running a certain, you know, Facebook promotion or a Google advertising promotion or something else, right? Or I have a software that I use every month I pay it off, and I know consistently that I'm paying it off, so I accrue all of these airline points, and then I'm able to travel for free. Or I use that money because I'm not really traveling much at all, and I'm using that as cash back to pay down those debts and get them, you know, more quickly down to zero. But you have to understand how it works, and you have to be prepared to know that this bill is coming due and I have to have the income and revenue from that for my business to be able to cover it, right? That's intelligent use of your credit cards. But sadly, most people aren't. When I first started out, I was $75,000 in debt. Got that credit card on Student Union campus and I got more and more credit cards and I was in debt. I was only making $21,000 a year. My credit was bad. I've been there. So how did I pay it off? That's what I'm going to go through today. I have five different ways that you can pay off your debt. And one way, well, two of the ways that four of the ways I've used, if I think about it now, four of the ways I've used to pay off debt over the years. And I'm going to walk through each of them now. So, you know, you have average interest rates around 17%. So if you don't pay off these debts, it just snowballs. It can crush you. Then people are filing for personal bankruptcy and it's just awful. So don't go down that road. There are ways to start to build wealth while you're paying off this debt as well. So let's go through the five ways. Number one is a debt avalanche program. So a debt avalanche basically means you're tackling the highest interest rate credit card. You know, if you've got a number of credit cards and one of them is a 23% interest rate, you kind of want to go after that one first, according to the debt avalanche. Now, my wife and I kind of disagree on this. She's more of a debt avalanche proponent, which is, you know, because she just sees X's and O's, ones and zeros. And she's like, that's a 23% interest rate. Let's go after that one because it has the higher interest rate. And I agree with that. You know, that's not a bad approach. In fact, that's the more, I don't want to say intelligent approach, because I like to think I'm pretty intelligent. So is my wife. It's the more rational approach, because it comes down to simple math. But the problem is we are not rational people. And so the second way to pay off debt is the snowball approach, which is the approach that I used to get out of debt. And I think Dave Ramsey talks about this as well, snowball approach. I think he's a little of both. I don't know. I disagree with Dave Ramsey on a lot of things. So I'm not going to bash Dave Ramsey. He's very great at helping people get out of debt. But there's a lot I disagree with him on the investing front, putting your money in the stock market and mutual funds and other crap. I've read his books. This is cringe when I think about his investing strategies. But let's talk about the snowball versus avalanche approach here. Let's go to the whiteboard, shall we? So let's say we have four different credit cards here. Okay, number one, we've got one that's at $500 debt, right? But that's got zero balance. So maybe you've got a new credit card. Like that's the one I had at the University of Pittsburgh. It had a $500 limit and it had a zero balance when I first got it. Of course, I didn't pay my bills on it right away. I went to the CD store and bought a few REM CDs. And then pretty soon that interest rate ended up jumping up, right? But nevertheless, let's just say this is your current status. You've got 0% and $500 on that card. Okay, we're not going to really worry about that card at all. Number two, you got a $5,000 credit card at 15% interest. Your third credit card, you have $2,500 on there, and that's at 23% interest. Number four is a $1,000 credit card at 17% interest. I'm going to turn this off because my little girl keeps asking to buy Robux. She's home from school today. That's not going to happen on my watch. So four different credit cards, $500, $5,000, $2,500, and $1,000. You see the different interest rates in this column over here. Okay. So now in the avalanche method, if you're watching right now, which would you pick? Which of these credit cards would signify the avalanche method? Yes, you're right. So the avalanche method, you would be going after this credit card at 23% interest. That's the avalanche, okay? That's the avalanche approach. But see, I operate more under the snowball. Because what I want to do is I want to go after the lowest hanging fruit as quickly as possible. Because as human beings, interestingly, we like little victories. If you buy a game app in the App Store, The reason that the games are constructed for you to win within the first few levels, like you play level one and you win and you do well on that first level, and then the second level, they make it easy enough for you to win, it's a dopamine rush. And the way that the games are constructed is this way on purpose, because we like little victories. So you imagine if you, and it has in-app purchases. So let's imagine you downloaded an app and you kept losing in the very first level. Are you going to want to advance to the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth levels? You're frustrated. You're probably going to close the app out and not play it again. Well, then that app developer is not going to make any money when you get to level 8 and you need to buy some coins or something, digital coins like in Robux or whatever. If you can't have little victories in the first level, you're never going to make it to level 8. That's how human brains work. That's how mine works. I know when I'm starting a new project or a new entrepreneurial project and I have a little victory in the beginning, man, that's so motivating, isn't it? And the same thing is true of paying off debt. So again, my wife is right. This approach to the avalanche would be smart. I'm going after the highest interest rate and trying to get rid of this $2,500 as soon as I can. But the way that I work and the way the snowball method works is that I want to go after this one. Get rid of this altogether right away. And now I've only got 3 left. And I know it might sound counterintuitive, but this is the way the human brain works. Going after the low-hanging fruit, getting rid of that first. This is exactly how I did it. When I had all of my debt listed on a spreadsheet, I had it all, I made a graph paper, and I sat there when I was in Dayton, Ohio, and I was miserable in debt. And I sat there and I wrote down all of my credit cards and my student loan debt and my car payment, and I mapped them out by graph. And every month I just kept chiseling away at the lowest hanging fruit. And I went from like 7 credit cards to 6 credit cards, 6 to 5. And before you knew it, all of these were gone. Because then I'm going to go after the next lowest hanging fruit in the snowball method. Then I'm going to go after this one. Then that'll be gone. And then I'm going after this one. Then that'll be gone. Then I'm down to 1 card. And the entire time, I'm just making minimum payments on these other ones until I can tackle them head on. So that's the snowball versus avalanche method. Those are 2 different strategies that I love. The third thing that you need to do is, or you could use in your arsenal, is a balance transfer option. This is something else that I've done. You know, if you're heavy into credit cards, that very often you'll be offered a new credit card with a 0% interest. Now, there are people that will say, don't do that. Don't open a new credit card with a 0% transfer balance because you're going to have another credit card now to deal with. Don't listen to those people. It's just another financial product. It's just another tool for you to use. So again, let's look at this snowball chart here. I know it's a little messy right now. I know you've been making fun of me in the chat for this. So let's say I get a 5th credit card now, okay? Let's say I get a 5th credit card at, I start with a 0 balance, but it's got a 0% interest rate. And I can take all of these cards and move them over here at 0% interest. I consolidate all of it right here. Now I'm not paying these exorbitant fees. The key here is that you don't want to increase it, okay? Please do not go about increasing this money. Don't spend anything more on this. Transfer it over and start tackling the payments. Make way higher payments than your minimum balance. Go all in on it. I stopped spending money on anything. Every penny that I had went towards paying down that debt, all of it. I didn't go out. I didn't go out to dinner. I didn't do any of that. I saved, I scrimped, I didn't go to Starbucks. I didn't waste money. I just went right after it like crazy. I was like a dog with a bone. And then before you know it, that'll all be gone. All of that debt will be wiped away because you tried that strategy. So don't be scared of transferring a balance to a 0% interest credit card that lasts for 18 to 24 months. You just bought yourself 18 or 24 months, 2 years with a 0% interest. Do it. But please cut up those other cards. Cut them up. And frankly, don't even use the new car that you transferred it to. The fourth thing that you want to do is debt consolidation. Now, I got burned big time by a debt consolidation company in the early, I think it was early 2000s. In fact, I think they ended up getting sued. There was a big class action lawsuit against them at one point. Fortunately, I didn't work with them for very long, but they actually did help me. And what they did was they consolidated all of my debt. The problem is that they shouldn't do it for a fee. The problem is that I ended up, like, the first month's payment for my, what should have gone to my credit cards, went to them. And then every month after that, they were making the payments for me in the form of like one payment. It was, in that way, it was a ripoff. A debt consolidation service, frankly, shouldn't charge you anything. They're going to make their money by consolidating it and then getting the interest from those payments. Like, they should be working with the banks on this consolidation program. So don't fall for that one like I did. But that can actually work. But to me, this is almost just like getting this fifth credit card with 0% interest. If you can manage it yourself, and I know the problem is that you got in this mess to begin with, do you trust yourself? It's like, okay, you're overweight. Do I trust you with a candy bar? You know? You struggle with weight loss, and then I put a pile of Snickers bars in front of you. The fifth thing that you can do to get out of credit card debt is to take out a personal loan. Now, this is another strategy that I've used over the years, is using a home equity line of credit, or you could even use a personal loan. There are many different loan options available to you. You could even work with a local bank to get a debt consolidation loan. But let's talk about the home equity line of credit. I think the home equity line of credit is a fantastic option because, remember, I always say you cannot eat equity. So if you live in a home where you have $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 in equity in that home, get a home equity line of credit from your local bank. Remember, they will give you a line of credit that'll start with a zero balance. Okay? They're not giving you a check. They're going to give you a line of credit with a zero balance. And now let's say you owe $17,000 in high interest credit card debt. You could then just write a check in one afternoon and have that all of that debt wiped out. Remember, that equity is something you're sitting on in your house. You're not doing anything with it. Why wouldn't you leverage that debt? Now, I've used home equity lines of credit. One of my favorite ways to invest in real estate. So if you live in a house that's not a performing asset, remember, if you live in a home where you're paying somebody else, that's not bringing cash into your pocket every month. You could use that home equity that you have in that house to buy a rental property. Imagine taking $30,000 or $40,000 out of a home equity as down payment on a rental property. Like, those are the types of rental properties that we do at our company. So you could actually put a down payment and have cash flow coming in from a cash flowing tenant paying in a brand new construction rental property. Smart move. But we're talking about the credit card debt specifically. You're transferring basically one financial product for another. And get out of 23% interest rates is a killer strategy to use a home equity line of credit or other personal loan where you can have a much lower interest rate or consolidating that into one loan payment. So these are just some of the options. Now, if you'd like more information or how to accelerate your financial freedom, we built our own financial freedom bootcamp. It's a 90-day bootcamp. It's totally free. You can download it at morninginvest.com/bootcamp. And each week we take you through the next step in the bootcamp in order to get out of debt and build financial freedom. It's the exact strategy that my wife and I used. It's totally free to download, but I want you to stick to the plan. Okay. Again, morninginvest.com/bootcamp. And if we brought you any value at all, please smash that like button and subscribe to the channel. Thank you so much for your questions, and we will see you next time.